In the year 2000, the Democrats won the election. But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election. Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. And you can hear by our music that today is Election Tuesday. And every Tuesday, from now until that most important Tuesday, November 2nd, 2004, we talk about the election. Until 2004, November 2nd, where hopefully we do what the song says, kick out the Republicans. Now, that's a song by Donnie Daly, began here on the Inside Scoop. It's now going across progressive talk shows. And we are talking about kicking out the Republicans. Now, the election itself, all that news, is taken a hiatus a little bit. George Bush has pulled his ads, some of his ads, in deference to Ronald Reagan. He hasn't pulled all of his ads. He still has a few of his ads attacking Kerry. Kerry, in fact, has pulled all of his ads. So apparently John Kerry is showing more respect for President Ronald Reagan even than George Bush has. And we're going to talk this hour about Ronald Reagan, about George Bush, where they're the same, where they're different, how it affects the election. You already have Fox News, the Republican mouthpiece, crowing on the air about how the death of Ronald Reagan will help George W. Bush. Before his body's even cold, Fox is talking about how this can help George Bush. Well, I think, actually, George Bush suffers by comparison. I've had many problems with Ronald Reagan, but in many ways, I think he was a better president, at least in our current president, George W. Bush. Now, I'm not sure if my opponent today will agree or not. I'm sure he's going to praise both Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. His name is Tom Rollins. He is the state chairman of the Utah College Republicans. And so, as you know, on the Inside Scoop, I like to bring on guests who disagree with my point of view to get a good discussion going. And you're welcome to join in the discussion as well. You are always part of the discussion. All you have to do is call in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. That toll-free number, if you just like the numbers, is 877-577-2667. Or those of you that like to send emails, we always welcome those. Just send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on today, Mark. I'm excited to talk about my two favorite cowboys, Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush.
Okay, I bet you hadn't heard our election song before, though, had you?
Yeah, well, you know, it talks about in November 2004, we got to get out the vote and even the score. And I'm just happy that College Republicans is working every day to get out the vote and mobilize our college campuses and make the difference to make it even a bigger victory in 04.
Yeah, well, we actually want to have the same victory we had in 2000, only the votes being counted this time would be nice. I don't know if you're for that or not. But let me ask you a question about George Bush and Ronald. First of all, just did John Kerry show more respect than George Bush from Ronald Reagan by the fact that Kerry stopped campaigning while George Bush kept running his ads?
No, I think that both sides are being very respectful, and I think both sides are finding their own way to be able to honor and respect the name and legacy of one of our best presidents that we've ever had, Ronald Reagan. And I think in their own way, they're going to show that their supporters how much they care about Ronald Reagan, because I think, you know, Kerry can do whatever he wants, but in the end, he can't deny the great things that Ronald Reagan did.
Well, we're going to talk about all the legacies of Ronald Reagan's, everything from anti-communism to massive deficits. But my first question is, don't you think George Bush should have pulled his ads as well in respect to Ronald Reagan?
I think that Ronald Reagan realizes that those in office are the ones that govern, and to be able to affect policy and to affect change, you actually need to get elected. And I think Ronald Reagan would want George W. Bush to be reelected, would want his vice president's son to be reelected.
And wouldn't want him to pull his ads.
No, I think Ronald Reagan is a true Republican, and I think that he'd want George W. Bush to get reelected and do what he has to take.
Okay, I'll tell you this, Tom. I think if Kerry had run ads at this time, he would have been sorely condemned by your party as being political, and I think George Bush should do the same. But let me move on and ask you a question. George Bush was asked right after the death of Ronald Reagan, he was asked whether he considered himself a Reagan Republican, and he said no. He said, no, I consider myself a George W. Bush Republican. Wasn't that a pretty arrogant claim on his behalf?
No, I think that, you know, as far as the different leaders in our party that we've had in the last couple of years, I think there's different parts that you take from our different leaders and stuff like that. And I think that people identify with Reagan on different levels or with different policies or his humor or the way that he interacted with people. And I think that, you know, George W. Bush, though he gets a lot from Reagan and has done a lot following in his footsteps, he's also of a different, little bit of a different cut from a different cloth and a different generation, so there are some differences.
Well, I think actually it was a very softball question. It was an easy chance for George Bush to show a little bit of, you know, compassion for the person Republicans call the patron saint of conservatives. I think he's a little bit too arrogant to do that. But I'm going to throw one softball question at you right now, and then all the rest are going to be hardball. My softball question is, where do you see Reagan and Bush the same and different? It's an open-ended question, and then we'll go to lots of specifics.
Well, I think, you know, like I opened it up, you know, they're both the cowboy presidents. They have that down-to-earth, I think, personality that people can relate to, that they look at the president when Ronald Reagan was president, they look at George W. Bush now, and it's someone that they can actually see themselves communicating with or that they can talk with. Another thing which I think is very obvious is that President Reagan, he called communism what it was. He called it the evil empire. And George Bush isn't afraid to call terrorists what they are and to call the threat against America today in our generation, in my generation, what it is, and that is the axis of evil. And, you know, I think that, you know, they also share some other different loves. They're both loved by the military. I think both of them oftentimes reference God and a higher power that, that directed things and gave thanks to a higher being, which, you know, helped found this country and helped, you know, guide some of the decisions. And I think that people can relate to that.
Okay, Tom, you've raised a number of issues, which is great. Just starts the debate. Let's start with the cowboys. My impression is there was a difference, that Ronald Reagan actually, you know, liked to ride horses. He was very active in California. George Bush, a lot of people don't know, he bought the Crawford Ranch just when he started running for president. This is a guy who hadn't spent a lot of time on a ranch, and I mean, I think he understands the photo opportunities there, but I don't know that he's really a cowboy like Ronald Reagan. Of course, Ronald Reagan was mostly acting most of the time anyway, but at least it seemed that he'd like to get out to the ranch, whereas I wonder about Bush, who just bought that ranch right before the election. But let's go to the communism and evil empire. I do agree that Ronald Reagan was right to call communism an evil empire. Of course, Reagan didn't recognize a lot of other evil in our midst. He didn't recognize the evil of apartheid in South Africa. George Bush, it seems to me, seems to have the same problem. I mean, terrorist axis of evil, who's his axis of evil? Well, it didn't include Afghanistan, right? It was North Korea, which is certainly evil, but he's done nothing about. In fact, he's withdrawing troops today from South Korea, just announced. Iraq, of course, he called evil, went in and invaded, even though it didn't do anything to us on September 11th. And Iran, we're helping Iran. He helped install Chalabi in power, Iran's guy. We've been helping Iran create a Shiite state, a theology state in Iraq. Don't you think that Ronald Reagan handled foreign policy a little bit better than our current president?
Oh, not at all. And I think that if you were to have your radio show back in the day of Ronald Reagan, I think you'd be blasting him just the same way that you're, you know, strongly anti-George W. Bush. I think that you would have called Reagan a simple man. I think you would have labeled Reagan somebody who didn't understand or had the capacity to understand foreign policy. But I think in 2020 hindsight, as we look back, just as you said, well, I think that Reagan handled it okay, at least better than Bush. I think people will say, even, I dare say, yourself one day, 20 years down the line, that you'll say, hey, George W. Bush was in a tough spot. Something like that had never been thought of or never had happened before. And he really did what was necessary, got tough on terrorism. And when, you know, he went after in Afghanistan and went after the Taliban, not like Bill Clinton when he was basically handed Osama bin Laden on a silver plate.
Wait a minute. I keep hearing that claim all the time, handed bin Laden on the silver platter. Now, you know that's not true. You know that's not true. Bill Clinton was not handed bin Laden on a silver platter. Let's be clear about what happened there before I get into all the stuff about conflating Afghanistan and Iraq, which Republicans always do. They pretend that the war in Iraq is somehow related to the war on terrorism. You believe that, right? You actually believe the war in Iraq is part of the war on terrorism, right?
I think it's an overall effort to stand up for freedom, to be able to liberate people.
But we're not liberating people in Sudan where there's genocide being practiced. We're not liberating people in Saudi Arabia. We're not liberating people in North Korea or China or Iran. Only Iraq where we can get their oil fields.
Yeah, well, you know, as we're all aware, you know, we're obviously in there for oil because, you know, gas prices are so low now that, you know, are, it's obviously serving our own interests. No, we're
there because we failed to get oil prices down. Somehow we weren't there for oil. That's great.
Because we've liberated over 25 million people. We've
you know, they don't seem to feel that they're liberated, Tom.
Waves have been found where people were raped, tortured, brutalized for speaking out against Saddam Hussein. Those are finally becoming unearthed.
Tom, the people don't seem to feel that they're liberated. They don't seem to be too happy that they're there. Some 82% want us out, and there are still tortures going on in Iraqi prisons. No, they're not being done by Saddam Hussein. They're being done by some of our people. So, you know, and what about all those other countries? I've never heard, maybe you can answer this, I've never heard a Republican answer this question. We went to war in Iraq, okay, first it was weapons of mass destruction, now it's not weapons of mass destruction. First, then it was a connection to Osama bin Laden, okay, there's no connection to Osama bin Laden. And third choice was to free the Iraqi people. Why haven't we gone in and freed the Sudanese people? You have Arabs killing blacks today. Millions are dying right now. There's ongoing genocide. Clearly, that situation is the worst human rights situation in the world. I've heard, by the way, not just United Nations and Amnesty International say that. I've heard Christian groups, conservative groups, talk about what's going on in Sudan. Kim Jong-il has nuclear weapons that one day will be able to hit California. Iran's developing nuclear weapons. Why did we go to – in Saudi Arabia. Let's not – it started about Saudi Arabia. 15 of the 19 terrorists are from Saudi Arabia. Afghanistan, we could use troops to capture Osama bin Laden, to capture Mullah Omar. None of these countries are we doing anything. We're all going into Iraq. I'd like you to explain, Tom, why Iraq and not these other countries.
Well, I think what happens is that, you know, someone like yourself and the radical liberal left will never be happy and will never be satisfied and will always find a reason to say, well, why aren't we doing more? Why aren't
Well, answer my question. Why aren't we in Sudan? Why aren't we in Afghanistan?
I like to say this. You know, in the United States, you know, we're a blessed nation. We have different resources and stuff. And sometimes, you know, I refer to the United States as kind of the ambulance of the world. You know, we're trying to help out and we're trying to do good things and we're sending foreign aid. I remember in North Korea when they had the huge natural disasters, you know,
Tom, you're not answering my question. My question is, okay, I understand. I'd be the first to say we have a conflict of priorities. We can't be everywhere at once. I agree with that. In fact, John Kerry actually wants to increase our military forces so we can be more places at once. But answer me this. Why are we in Iraq and not Sudan where genocide is occurring?
Well, John Kerry, P.S., wants to do that today because, you know, that's what the opinion polls are telling. I'm sure he'll flip before the elections. We'll see what's
going on. Actually, John Kerry's been a lot more consistent than George Bush on a number of issues, and we can get to that in a minute. But please answer my question. Why aren't we in Sudan? Do you think we should be in Sudan?
I think, you know, that we can't be everywhere at once. I think we need to finish the job in Iraq. I think we need to see that through. I think that we also, you know, we're in Afghanistan, which has committed a lot of our resources and a lot of our troops.
Do you think we should have taken troops from Afghanistan, from the search to capture Osama bin Laden, from the destruction of the Taliban, which, after all, they killed 3,000 Americans? Should we have removed troops, special forces from Afghanistan and sent them to Iraq, or should we have left them in Afghanistan?
I think we're doing both things effectively, and I think, you know, we're fighting both fronts of the war effectively, and I think in the end, 2020 hindsight, we'll be able to see that it was done in a good manner.
Well, basically, whatever
to do, and I think President Bush is going to continue to be tough on terrorism, which is college students alike. I think he's going to continue to support our military with college students alike. And
yeah, but Tom, I mean, your position is whatever Bush does is right. We have 10 times the troops in Iraq than we do in Afghanistan. 10 times. Is Iraq 10 times the threat to America that Al-Qaeda is?
All I know is that if we pulled our troops out now, you'd be screaming and yelling and kicking.
Well, I mean, as Colin Powell said, he was right. You break it, you bought it. I mean, we've totally messed up Iraq, and we're creating a terrorist state there.
We have not fully messed up Iraq. You know, that's the thing about liberals is that, you know, they want to attack the people who are coming in and helping. What about attacking, Saddam Hussein? He was the one who spent the money on himself and his lavish palaces and his sons to be able to rape and pillage women.
Exactly.
To take away the rights.
You're right. You're right, Tom.
And care about human rights.
Tom.
That they have given to the discovery of the thousands of people found in mass graves is actually pretty disturbing.
It's very disturbing, Tom, and I want you to today condemn the President of the United States that helped aid Saddam Hussein in a way to stop Iraq, sent his envoy, Don Rumsfeld, to shake hands with Saddam Hussein, allowed American companies to sell chemicals to Saddam Hussein that he later used to kill thousands of Kurds. I want you to condemn that president that did that. His name, of course, is Ronald Reagan. Will you condemn Reagan for that?
No, because you know what? I think President Bill Clinton also dealt with Iraq in a way that he thought would be appropriate and stuff and decided not to go in and decided to appeal.
Thought would be appropriate. There's a big difference between aiding Saddam Hussein, giving him chemical weapons, helping him kill thousands of people, and Bill Clinton, who shot down his planes, contained Iraq, but just didn't invade. Don't you think there's – oh, he also bombed him, too. Don't you think there's a difference between aiding the Saddam Hussein regime and containing it? Come on, you got to condemn at least Ronald Reagan's policy of aiding Saddam Hussein. At least I can get that from you, can't I?
I think during the Iran and Iraq conflict, it was a very difficult time. I think in the end, because of our policies, we were able to win the Cold War. And I think there's always going to be some rough bumps in the road. But I think in the end, we're going to be able to see that the overall policy got us the goal, which was to end the Cold War.
And how did Ronald Reagan aiding Iraq help us in the Cold War? Can you explain that to me? Because I miss it.
I think if you remember, you know, as far as the Iran and Iraq conflict, it was a very difficult time and stuff like that. It was a major front in the Cold War. And
it was not a front in the Cold War. Iran had no support by the Soviet Union or the United States. And Iraq, if anyone, had support by the Soviet Union. This was not – Iran-Iraq had nothing to do with the Cold War.
I think in the end we're going to be able to see that Reagan's policies win out. And I think that we're going to be able to see that people like Bill Clinton, who always passed the buck, and when we were, you know, the USS Cole was bombed and everything like that, he just refused. And that's what he always did.
No, when the USS Cole was bombed, he prepared a plan that he submitted to respond. You got to remember, the Cole was bombed in October 2000. All right? His plan was ready. October 26th, I believe, was the date. His plan was ready in December of 2000. It was presented to Condoleezza Rice by Sandy Berger, Clinton's national security advisor. And Condoleezza, and who told Condoleezza Rice, the most important thing you have to focus on is Al-Qaeda. Even George Tenet, who I profoundly dislike, warned Bush 40 times about Al-Qaeda, and he took no action against the Cole. Don't you think that George Bush should have responded to the Cole bombing?
I think that George Bush responded in an appropriate way, and I think when he...
An appropriate way. You know...
He has actually said when he came to office that he was given no as far as anti-terrorism plan, as far as the Taliban and stuff. And I think you can find stuff, and I can find stuff on my side that says, well, this was what happened.
Well, yes, except that we have documents, and we have records, and we have Richard Clark saying that there was a plan, and we have Condoleezza Rice saying, well, there was no plan. There was just a series of actionable items, which isn't a plan. It's a series of actionable items. But I'll tell you, I want to get to my callers. I want to give them a chance to take you on. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I think our guest, Tom Rollins, can be trusted to say that everything George W. Bush has done is appropriate, like our president. I don't know that he can think of any mistakes, but I'll ask him that. Let me give you a chance to get on the line. Again, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Hi, this is Bert from Minnesota.
Hey, Bert from Minnesota. You got a question or comment or challenge to one of us?
Yeah, I'd like to challenge your guest about his statement that Clinton was weak in the war on terrorism.
Okay.
My evidence is Richard Clark's book, Against All Enemies. And, boy, I mean, when you read that book, Clark comes everything just this side of endorsing Clinton's third presidency. I mean... towards the end of Clinton's administration, he was holding weekly meetings on terrorism, saying,
yep.
You know, what are we doing about Al-Qaeda today? You
right.
know, that people, his subordinates got the idea that this was an expectation of his. He wanted results.
Yeah, and compare that to John Ashcroft, who his deputy said tries to get him to focus on terrorism. And on the day of September 11th, John Ashcroft turned down a request for more money to fight terrorism. How do you answer that, Tom?
Meeting that he never had.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
They had, I think, 40 top-level meetings, and none of them dealt with the threat of terrorism. Tom, how do you respond to that?
Well, I got to say first, I noticed that the caller is from Minnesota, and being that I'm the state chairman of College Republicans in Utah, I want to say that Minnesota is actually one of our finest organizations in the nation, and Senator Norm Coleman credits the College Republicans of Minnesota for bringing him to victory and doing the groundwork, and they're going to be looking forward to actually win it for Bush in Minnesota.
Well, that's a matter of perspective, of course. I think it had a lot to do with the disgust at the perceived treatment of Wellstone's funeral that the White Ring noise machine had been put at.
And I'm the biggest fan in the world of Paul Wellstone, but I don't want to get sidetracked. Tom, I want you to answer the caller's question about Bush not being prepared for 9/11.
No, I don't think you passed the book at all. I think basically what you had is a bureaucracy, which Reagan was always against. You know, he always said that the architect of, you know, Washington, D.C., you knew he was a bureaucrat because there's so many roads that just go into circles. I mean, the bottom line is that under Clinton, under Reagan, you know, whoever the president happened to be, if it was Carter, they basically built up a bureaucracy where the different levels of government had trouble communicating. They didn't have the same language as computers and stuff like that.
Yeah, but why is it, I mean, Bert's question still remains, why is it that Clinton had weekly meetings to deal with terrorism, and Bush didn't have a single meeting during the 9 months, Condoleezza Rice ignored the plan given to her by Sandy Anthony Berger, and even John Ashcroft wouldn't spend money on counterterrorism. I remember the morning of September 11th. I was in the House working there at the time, and there was a bill on the floor. And the bill, the Democrats wanted to spend money counterterrorism. The Republicans wanted to spend money on the Star Wars, the Strategic Defense Initiative, missile fighting in space, and they were fighting. The Democrats, again, wanted to fight terrorism. The Republicans wanted to fight missiles from, I guess, the Soviet Union that no longer existed. I don't know. Why is it that the Republicans before 9/11 were so blind to the problems of terrorism?
You know, I think that part of it is that, you know, as far as spending bills on the floor of the House of the United States Congress, it's like people just wanted to fatten up the cat, which was obviously ineffective. It was ineffective, you know, when 9/11 happened. Obviously, that happened because there were some flaws, but it also happened because nothing was done in the Clinton administration to get the FBI to talk to the CIA, to make sure that the CIA was talking to the NSA.
But Clinton was meeting every week.
Meetings don't accomplish anything if you don't cut out the bureaucracy and if you just wanted to support a bigger government.
What are you talking about?
It stopped the Millennium bombing.
The plan, I mean, he was going after Al-Qaeda seriously. What are you talking about?
He missed Osama bin Laden by 4 hours. I mean, Bush hasn't even gotten that close. But let me ask you, before you keep attacking Clinton.
He missed Osama bin Laden because he said, well, we don't have anywhere to put him. Well, you know, maybe he should have found a dark, deep place. I don't know.
Wait a minute. What's your source? What are you talking about? Who said we don't have anywhere to put him? They fired missiles at him. They weren't trying to trophy him.
They missed him at the training camp, right,
by 4 hours. What do you mean he didn't have to put him?
You know, it's like basically, you know, they're trying to go after Al-Qaeda, but they weren't doing everything that they could. That was Clinton's policy, is that if someone ticks us off or something happens, you lob a few bombs their way, but you don't go into full-scale invasion. You don't really take care of the root of the problem.
Well, now, wait a minute.
We intercepted the Millennium plot. We took care of the Olympics.
The only reason he didn't respond to the call was because Bush was becoming president, and Clinton made the decision, rightly or wrongly, to give the new president a chance to respond because he didn't want to have it laid on him the way George Bush Sr. laid on him Somalia.
Richard Clark documents this in his book. It's a heck of a read. You need to read it.
Hey, we got to go to a break, but I appreciate your call, Bert. I appreciate your giving some tough questions to our guests. I'm going to come back and ask you more of those questions, Tom, and we'll have further callers giving you or me a hard time. That's what we do here on The Inside Scoop. Again, we're going to go to a commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about George Bush and his policies and also about how he is like or not like Ronald Reagan. This Election Tuesday, right back. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com.
It's a good thing that Saddam was captured, hiding in a hole just like a rat would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for...
The powers that be, both political and corporate, are expert at fooling themselves while mistakenly thinking that they're also fooling us. The latest culprits in this fool's game are the barons of cable television. Lobbyists for such outfits as Time Warner, Cablevision, and Cox rammed a deregulation law through Congress in 1997 that allows them to set their own rates. Trust us, they said at the time, promising that the elixir of unregulated competition would magically cause our monthly cable charges to fall. Like rubes at their first medicine show, Congress swallowed this tonic of lies, and now you and I are stuck with an unregulated cable TV monopoly in each of our towns that, far from lowering our rates, has jacked up our monthly bills by 40% in just 6 years. Well, yes, say the cable giants, but we now give you more channels than before. Who do they think they're fooling? Yes, we get more channels, but they show the same old junk, including repeats of repeats and dozens of channels we never requested and never watch. Indeed, we pay for about 63 channels, but mostly watch about 8. Well, yes, say the giants again, still believing they're fooling us, but the fees we pay for programming are up too, so we're being forced to raise our rates. Hey, Flim Flam Man, in many cases, you are the programmer. For example, Time Warner owns CNN, TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, and many others, so it's paying itself for the higher program costs. Besides, the cost of all the programs you get on cable is only about $7 of your monthly cable bill, which now averages nearly $37. Well, yes, say the giants, trying one more trick on us, but we need higher rates to survive. Survive? Your profit margins are running above 30%, about 3 times the average of other industries. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this tomfoolery, call Consumers Union, 202-462-6262.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owner.
In November of 2004, we've got to get out the vote and even the score. When the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't hit their heads on the door.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop. This is Election Tuesday, where we talk with our opponents, the Republicans, and try to find out what they're thinking, why they think the way they do. My guest is someone from the reddest of red states. It's Utah. I don't know that Utah ever voted for a Democrat. Maybe they voted for Lyndon Johnson in 1964, but it's very rare. It's a rock rib red state. That's hard to say. And he is the state chairman of the Utah College Republicans. His name is Tom Robbins. And we're talking about George Bush and Ronald Reagan and similarities and differences. You know, one thing that I noticed about Ronald Reagan is that although he really claimed to really care about cutting taxes, which I know he really cared about, when he saw that he couldn't get Congress to cut spending as well, and he ran up the largest deficits of those times, he did recognize in 1986 that he made a mistake, and he raised taxes again. George Bush, who's run up even larger deficits than Ronald Reagan, apparently hasn't realized he's made a mistake and is very much against paying for these deficits. He very much thinks that your generation, Tom, should pay twice the taxes that people today don't want to pay. Do you think that, first of all, do you think Ronald Reagan made a mistake in 1986 when he raised taxes? And second of all, do you think Bush is making a mistake in letting this deficit be so high?
No, I don't think that Ronald Reagan made a mistake at all, and I don't think that George W. Bush is at all. He's doing the right things to stimulate the economy, to make sure people like myself who are about ready to graduate that will have jobs and will be able to contribute, so we'll be able to continue this great growth that we're on as it escalates.
Yeah, if it keeps going up.
The despair of Democrats past November. And I think one of the cool things about Reagan and about George W. Bush that I see from a college Republican standpoint is Ronald Reagan in 1984 had one of the largest, best organized, most enthusiastic youth movements ever this nation has ever seen, the Youth for Reagan movement. And we're seeing that again with George W. Bush. The amount of people that the college Republicans, we've doubled in the amount of chapters, or tripled the amount of chapters we've had in the last couple of years and doubled our membership. It's because that young people are just excited, they're attracted to the magnetic personality of George W. Bush, just like they were in 1984 for the Youth for Reagan effort.
Maybe that's true in Utah. I don't see that much here in this area of the country. But, of course, with the Republican growth in jobs, if it continues at this blistering pace, maybe by Inauguration Day we'll have as many jobs as we have when Bill Clinton left office, but I doubt it. I doubt that George Bush will break even. But you haven't answered my question. Okay, if Reagan did not make a mistake in 86 by raising taxes, then, I mean, who was right? Reagan recognized that his deficits would lead to future generations like college people, kids in college, paying twice the amount of taxes. Because rich people today don't want to pay for the war in Iraq. Was Reagan right when he raised taxes again, or was Bush right when he refuses to raise taxes now? You can't have it both ways.
I think that they're both in different, slightly different economic times and stuff. And I think as we look, once the elections are over, I think when people sit down in the different committee chairs, it's always hard to make cuts, especially when you're dealing with your home districts and no one likes to cut their own fat out. But I think a lot of people are going to take a hard look, and that the Republican majority after the 2004 election is going to get spending a little bit more under control.
But, Tom, we have a Republican majority right now, and they're passing huge amounts of pork. I don't know if you saw the most recent omnibus spending bill, but there's all kinds of things in it, things for rainforests in Iowa. There's a huge amount of farm subsidies. There's corporate welfare. This Republican Congress is spending, in fact, totally apart from Homeland Security and the military, is spending at a greater rate than was done under Bill Clinton. So it seems to me that the Republicans are the big spenders now, not the Democrats, aren't they?
No, I think that, you know, we're doing the things to be able to stimulate the economy. I mean, you work in Capitol Hill and worked for a Democrat. I think that, you know, you worked every day in your office to bring home the bacon to your home district. And I think it's just kind of a culture of Congress. But I think after the elections, people are going to really sit down and they're going to make the hard decisions. And I think George Bush is going to lead in that area. But and as far as saying, you know, you're not seeing college students excited about the president, I think you just got to open up your eyes and start talking to people who are a little bit outside the Democratic bubble.
I think they're scared of being drafted, frankly. I think they're worried that they're going to have to start paying, but not only in taxes, double taxes for Bush's mistakes, but also paying in blood and lives for Bush's mistakes. That's the people I talk to that are worried about it.
So last October, CNN did a poll, and nationwide, George W. Bush had a little bit over 54% approval rating.
Not anymore.
And at that time, he had a little bit over 54% of the approval rating.
Not anymore.
He did a poll of college students and found that was actually higher among college students, 60% approval rating. Why? Because young people of our generation respect the fact that he's standing up to terrorists, that he's tough on those who hate America and want to see us destroyed. And also, he's also doing the things which are stimulating our economy, and he's a magnetic personality.
Stimulating our economy? We have the worst jobs since Herbert Hoover. I mean, I think college students maybe don't realize, maybe they're being lied to, maybe they don't realize that they're going to have to pay twice the amount of taxes because Bush doesn't want to pay taxes now, but someone's got to pay this deficit back. I don't think you want us to default on the national debt, do you?
No, I think we're doing the right things now in a tough situation. You know, we went through a boom brought on by the dot-coms and everything like that, but I think he's doing the right things now to stimulate the economy. Of course, just like Reagan, he's called a loony bin, and he's told that he's slow-witted and that he doesn't really get it.
I might get to another caller, but you know what a bromide is? A bromide is when you say everything's going to be all right. The president's doing the right thing. Everything is just fine. And you don't give specifics. And you don't say how you're going to solve the problem. Just stay the course. Trust the president. It'll be all fine.
Look at the hard numbers. 248,000 jobs just last month. We're seeing growth.
Right. We've lost 1.5 million since Bush became president. I mean, to me, that's like somebody. You have $1,000 and somebody comes in and robs you, knocks you over the head, steals all your money. And then a week later, they give you back $500 and say, shall we call it even? No, give me all my money back and more. It should be making money in the bank. Don't take away 3 million jobs, give 1.5 million back, and then say, aren't we doing really good?
You want to raise taxes on anyone who has an idea or anyone who wants to.
No, just the top 2% who can afford to pay it. Let me go to a caller. 877-57-SCOOP. Feel free to join in this lively debate. That's your right. Or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. I'll be reading some of your emails in just a minute. First, let me go to a caller who's been hanging on. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hey, this is Brian from New Jersey.
Hey, Brian from New Jersey. Got a question for me or my guest?
Yeah. He says, you know, we're so tough on terrorism. Let's just assume for a second, even though the President of the United States has already said that 9/11 and Iraq had nothing to do with each other, let's just assume that they did. Is going into Iraq and raining a rain of fire and killing 10,000 civilians going to create more terrorists, or is it going to kill the terrorists? And I think, this is my opinion, I'd like to hear what your caller has to say, I think it's going to create more terrorists, because if they blew up my house and killed my family, I'm going after them.
Yeah, I mean, we really have not won the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people, whether you look at polls or just the fact that people are afraid of us. Tom, it's a tough question. How do you answer?
I think clearly that when it's all said and done is that we have won the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people, and that in the end, when people are allowed to have, before we went in, I mean, liberals, the way that they get their voice out is they have freedom of speech.
Yeah, I still support that. I hope you do too.
Coalition forces? No. They thrive because they have freedom of press. Did that exist? No.
You're right, it doesn't exist.
All those things exist, and as you have those things exist and they're able to exercise their newfound freedoms.
Tom, what world are you living in? We censor Iraqi newspapers. You must know that. We censored the Iraqi newspapers. So, freedom of press in Iraq? Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding at all. And in fact, I think if you look at the oppression under Saddam Hussein and you look at what is happening now, I think you're finding that there's a greater growth, that as far as people being able to have access, women's being able to have rights. I mean, I am so surprised that millions of Iraqi women now are going to be able to vote in the upcoming elections, that they're able to walk around more freely, and that the left is screaming and pulling their hair out and saying, why did we go into Iraq? I'm sorry that the Republican Party cares about women's rights, but, you know, I'm not.
Well, let's talk about women's rights. You know, the Taliban was the worst treatment of women ever. We went into Afghanistan. Well, no, but we didn't. But Afghanistan is going back to the Taliban. I just did a show on this, folks. You can check out my archive, www.radioinsidescoop.com. The leading proponent of Afghan women's rights is complaining that because American troops left to fight the war in Iraq, we only have control of Kabul. Afghanistan is going back to the Taliban, going back to Al-Qaeda, going back to mistreatment of women. They're afraid to leave. And in Iraq, too, folks, they are afraid for their own security to even leave their homes. So I don't know why this wonderful, you know, it's nice to think, I understand, and frankly, I think that was part of Reagan's charm. People like to believe that everything's okay, morning in America. But the facts just on the ground aren't like that. I wish they were. I really wish they were, but they're not.
Also, if you're going to believe a CNN poll that 54% of the United States is, you know, for George Bush, then you have to believe Mark's poll that 84% of the Iraqis don't want us there. So how did we win the hearts and minds? Explain that to me.
Tom, what about the fact that 80% of Iraqis want us to go?
I think, you know, different ones want us to go in different levels and stuff like that. I think they want different participation and stuff like that. I don't exactly know how the polls are conducted in Iraq. I really don't. But I think that overall is that people, you know, they want health care, you know, they want their water and things like that, and we're helping to turn out that...
How about Americans?
Why do they have it?
Where Saddam Hussein spent and plundered all the money on his personal palaces and...
Hey, Tom. Should a president of the United States care more about Americans' health care than Iraqis' health care?
You know, I think as a liberal, I think you'd be concerned about everybody's health care.
Well, I am, but...
To be able to provide the different facilities that were not available before.
I am concerned about everyone's health care, but I think given that we don't have it...
You know, we find 300,000 people found in mass graves, and nobody on the left cares. There's just a collective yawn.
Oh, we don't care.
Well, there weren't 300,000, first of all. There were tens of thousands. That's true. And those mass graves were done under your beloved president, Ronald Reagan, who did nothing to stop it and, in fact, aided the guy. So I would think there'd be a little bit of humility.
Sadistic dictator named Saddam Hussein, who the only people who ever went after him were George W. Bush Sr. and the current president.
And who built him up? And who gave him power? And who gave him weapons?
I would say the oil.
Ronald Reagan.
His palace.
Ronald Reagan, your hero, who you're not going to condemn. I mean, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, Tom. At least I'd like to hear, I'd like to hear a little bit of humility. Just tell me this. Okay, if you won't say Ronald Reagan made a mistake in arming Saddam Hussein, you won't made a mistake in raising taxes in 86, let me ask you this. In what respect did either Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush, I'll give you both, I want you to tell me one mistake each president made. Can you do that?
No, I think if we look at it, all the administrations, I think there's always things in 2020 hindsight, you know, that that the different presidents could have done.
Okay,
you know,
what was W.'s mistake?
I'll say something if you can tell me something that you're upset about Bill Clinton.
I will. It's a deal. You want me to start?
If you want to talk about Bill Clinton,
I'll start. Right. Bill Clinton should never have signed the Defense of Marriage Act. Okay, it was a disgrace. He shouldn't have done it. He shouldn't have bowed into the conservative right. He shouldn't have done it. Okay,
well,
that was his mistake. What's your mistake for George W. Bush?
No, I think that I think George W. Bush, as he looks and you know, he looks at the different issues that are going on in America and stuff. You know, I think that he wishes that the different levels of government would have been communicating better before 9/11. I think he wished that he would have been a little bit more aware about the bureaucracy that was going on, the fact that the FBI and the CIA didn't have the ability to, you know, even email each other like a corporation does,
so,
or be able to have that communication.
Are you saying he should have taken some of the warnings about terrorism more seriously, like calling rallies Phoenix memo?
No, I think he should have looked at the bureaucracy, maybe at the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA, and realized that they were having, you know, turf battles that have been going on for generations and presidencies long before him. And I think, you know, that could have been something that could have been an improvement.
Okay, Brian, you've got the floor. I've been interrupting you, so go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, there's plenty of things, in my opinion, that Clinton did wrong, okay? I mean, he signed NAFTA, he signed GATT. There's tons of things that every president does wrong where people are human beings, but he didn't get 800-plus of our American citizens killed. He didn't stir up the Middle East so bad that, I'm telling you, we're creating so many terrorists over there. If you want to talk about what happened on 9-11, I'm sorry. I think it's going to be really scary in the next couple of years, all these new Osama bin Ladens that we're creating, and Clinton did none of that. In fact, I don't remember anybody any American...
I think the misnomer here is you're saying that we're creating terrorism. These people hate America. They hate you. They hate
me.
They hate our families.
Why?
They want to blow us up.
Question.
And they want to
Why fail. Do they hate America?
And if you want to sit there and be like, you know, hold on
one at a time.
There will always be people who hate freedom. We need to deal with that fact, and we need to be tough on terrorism, beef up our security, and be able to make it happen in our military, which George W. Bush is doing.
Into their business. Oh. We've done nothing but butt our nose in over there. That's why they hate us. They don't hate us because we have freedom. Well, they could care less.
See, Tom, I think what you're doing is there's a difference between a dynamic and a static situation. I don't mean to use big words. You assume that all these people, hate us. Well, I'll agree with you. Al-Qaeda does hate us.
Right.
But I don't agree that every Iraqi used to hate us. In fact, they used to see us as a beacon of freedom. We were condemning Saddam Hussein. But we are creating terrorists, people who were ordinary citizens living their lives are starting to hate us and starting to want to attack us.
We're
Don't you see that
ordinary citizens who one day are going to grow up and now that they're teenagers are going to become the mayor of their local city in Iraq? That one day they're going to be the president of Iraq, or they're going to be involved in the cabinet.
I hope
you're
right.
They're going to join the new government that's being created, and they're going to be the beacon of hope and prosperity for their generation and region to be able to uplift the ideals of democracy and to be able to breathe the fresh air of freedom, which will flow to that generation.
Tom, I hope one day you're right. The UN representative Lakhdar Brahimi, that Bush threw all his trust in, he called Bremer a dictator because he said our ambassador Bremer there, who's running the coalition provisional authority there, wasn't letting local Iraqi make local decisions. He called our guy a dictator. So I hope you're right one day. I really do. Brian, one last comment before I go to a commercial break.
I think I'm done with this guy.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call. If you want to call in and take on Tom or me, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. Call in this Election Tuesday. Let us hear it. And when we get back, I'll be reading some of your emails that you sent to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Back with more of The Scoop right after this.
They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Two big decisions handed down by the Supreme Court yesterday affecting pension policy and truck traffic. In the first case, two Illinois men who worked construction jobs and then retired at the age of 39 will have their pensions restored to their full amounts. The Central Laborers Pension Fund docked them benefits after the two had gone back to work. The justices did leave the door open for pension funds to adopt restrictions against so-called double-dipping in the future, though, so long as the workers in the fund know about the policy when they join it. The second case clears the way for Mexican truck traffic to travel unimpeded on U.S. highways as required by the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. Various environmental and union groups had sued to block the move, citing clean air and vehicle safety concerns, but the Supreme Court said it's not the federal government's job to consider such factors when following free trade obligations.
Instead of passing an extension for unemployment benefits, a new bill approved by the House on Thursday seeks to set up so-called reemployment accounts. Unemployed workers could receive up to $3,000 in a personal account for use in getting a job. However, the exact amount will be up to each state to determine, and to be eligible, a person must be able to prove they are likely to exhaust their unemployment benefits.
Although independent trade unions are currently illegal in Iraq under the law of the occupying authorities, the Federation of Workers' Councils and Unions in Iraq continues to work on a draft labor law to be implemented following the planned restoration of sovereignty at the end of June. And it's setting its sights high, a maximum 6-hour working day or 30-hour work week, retirement at age 55, double pay for working nighttime hours, and a minimum 36 days of vacation per year are just some of the provisions in the draft legislation.
10,000 striking home health care workers in New York City declared a partial victory on Monday when their union, the Service Employees International Local 1199, reached a tentative new contract. Home health care workers' average pay is $7 per hour, but under the terms of the new agreement, their wages will increase to $10 per hour in the next 3 years. However, the tentative settlement only covers half of the total 23,000 striking healthcare workers throughout the city. The other half will remain on strike through Wednesday.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The nation's unemployment rate for May remained steady at 5.6%, even though there were a 250,000 new jobs generated last month, and the number of unemployed people counted by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics actually rose by 39,000. The Economic Policy Institute qualifies this as a solid job market recovery, but notes it takes the average American looking for a job 5 months now to find success.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop. This is Election Tuesday on The Scoop, and we're talking with the Republicans. Specifically with Tom Robbins. He's the state chairman of the Utah College Republicans, Utah, of course, being one of the reddest of the red states. And he and I don't agree on much except perhaps on the right of Americans to practice free speech and to disagree in public. I got a number of emails. I want to read some of them to you, and then we'll get back to the phones. I know some of you are hanging on. There are a couple empty lines, though, if you want to call in at 877-57-SCOOP. The short one is I got a question here from Michael in Alabama. He loves my bumper music and wants to know where he can get a copy of the song. Well, you can email me, Michael. The easiest way, though, is just go to my archives, and I will play a full copy of the song at the end of tonight's broadcast, and all you have to do is copy it right there from the website, and hopefully you'll be able to do that. Now on to more policy matters. Bert writes that according to Richard Clark's book, the invasion of Iraq was linked directly to bin Laden's number one wish to increase al-Qaeda recruitment, that actually our invasion of Iraq actually is helping al-Qaeda. Gordon from Michigan says the same thing. He writes, "Hi, I think George Bush has done just what al-Qaeda wanted him to do. He has overextended the U.S. military, overstretched the U.S. economy, discredited the U.S. image internationally, while leaving Homeland Security in a state of insecurity and leaving Osama bin Laden alone to live and fight another day. Bush has the national security credibility of a schmuck posing in his flight suit. Whose side is he on? I don't think it's America's." I do, though, have conservative listeners, and Ben is one of my more consistent conservative listeners, and I welcome the other side listening in. Mark, he condemns me for saying, "Oh, Mark Clinton did not stop the Millennium Bomber. Wish Democrats would stop saying that. It was a good customs agent." Even Janet Reno said that under oath. The answer, Ben, is that it was a good customs agent, absolutely, who caught him. But part of it was the structure set at the top, and this is also what Richard Clark testified to, that when you have people at the top banging on doors every day, every week, saying, "What are we doing to stop terrorism?" that kind of thing filters down to the lower level. What did Clinton do to stop the coal, you ask? The answer is he developed a plan that George Bush people refused to carry out. Ben also asks about, do I think that Clinton's lack of spending could be the reason the economy struggled for the past few years? Government spending accounts for 50% to 75% of our economy. Well, first of all, your figures are wrong. Government spending accounts for about 15% to 20% of the economy. Number two, the economy was very good under Bill Clinton. It was the longest extension in American history, the largest recovery, the largest economic expansion in American history. I think that's the reason why, as much as Ronald Reagan, when he ended office, had his ratings go up from 50% to 60%, Bill Clinton, when he left office, had his approval rating at 66%. He is our most beloved president, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of tears when he's gone. So the answer is no. Clinton did not cause the current recession. Indeed, we were doing very well. And I think that one reason we were doing well is because Clinton believed in an economy that spread the wealth. Under Clinton's reign, the poor got richer and the rich got richer too, and everyone was better off. And when the poor are richer, they can buy more, and it doesn't lead to an economy going bad. When you have people like George Bush taking money from the rich and giving it – excuse me, taking money from the poor and giving it to the rich, obviously that doesn't help the economy because the poor and the middle class are the engines of the economy. One more email, and then I'm going to get Tom a chance. I know he's just burning to respond to all I've been saying right now. One more email. This is from Adam. Adam Lohr writes, "We recently captured a high-ranking al-Qaeda terrorist who was 27 on the FBI most wanted list, and Ashcroft freed him in Syria because he said we couldn't try him without releasing confidential information. Ask how this can be justified in a war on terror." That's a lot for you to talk about, Tom. Take your pick.
Well, you know, being that it's Election Tuesday, it's interesting to see the political ramifications in that. You wanted to talk a little bit about Reagan and talk about George W. Bush and some of the similarities. I think the same can be said about Reagan and the same thing can be said about Bush, is that they're polarizing figures. Reagan truly, truly was hated by the liberal left. And, you know, because he had a lot of Reagan Democrats who in the South later become very solid Republicans that are helping turn the South into a huge sweeping Republican majority. And then you also have, on the other side now, you have George W. Bush, who's the current president, who liberals also just hate with a passion, and that's what they're united behind.
Well, you know, one of the things that liberals, if you will, really disliked about Ronald Reagan was that when he had his smiling face and morning in America, much like George Bush claims to be a compassionate conservative, he was basically ending homeless shelters. We didn't used to have homeless on the streets in America, but Ronald Reagan ended mental care for mental patients.
We didn't used to have homeless on the streets of America.
No, we really didn't. I remember when Ronald Reagan, and I'm old enough to remember this, I remember the 1970s in our major cities, there weren't the homeless on the streets. But Ronald Reagan, what he did is he closed down mental institutions, and he let these crazy people out on the streets because he didn't want to take the time to care for them, just like he cut legal aid for the poor. The one thing, Ronald Reagan was very blind to the real suffering that went on in America during the 1980s among the poor, people who were homeless, people who were jobless, cutting student loans for people in college like yourself. And in that way, I think he is very similar to George Bush.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that the reaction to, in 1984, to Ronald Reagan by the extreme liberal left and their hate for Ronald Reagan was to nominate a very successful politician. His name is Michael Dukakis.
It was Walter Mondale that ran against Reagan, by the way, just
84.
So you know. Right. It was Walter Mondale ran in 84. Dukakis ran in 88.
Or excuse me, in 88. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So, but Mondale, whose only state he could win was Minnesota.
That's right. Ronald Reagan won his election. In fact, Ronald Reagan, I admit, got more votes in 1984 than any other American presidential candidate. The second, by the way, the second largest number of votes were given to Al Gore in 2000. He is the second most popular presidential candidate. George Bush, of course, did not get as much.
The response was to nominate Walter Mondale, a person who did not have the vision, and people were just completely connected with Ronald Reagan.
I concede we lost the 84 election.
2004, we had George W. Bush.
I concede we lost the 84 election. I'm not fighting the 84 election right now. Part of my problem with Ronald Reagan was that he was a good salesman. Here he was, really hurting poor people. Actually, really changing. The 80s were known as the me generation, the greedy generation. People, there used to be a time in America, in the 60s, even before, where we looked out for each other, where we cared about each other, where churches would care about the poor, where people would understand The people would understand that there, but for the grace of God, go I. And that people who are on hard times actually can use a step up, can actually use some help. They didn't hate the poor. They didn't look at them and say, oh, you're evil, you're wrong. It was Ronald Reagan, I have to say, who created this whole lie of the welfare queen, created this idea that poor people are to be hated and distrusted, and that the rich, they can do whatever they want. They can manipulate savings and loans, whatever. We can deregulate them. It was very much Ronald Reagan who changed our used to be our compassion for people who are not as well off as us, and really focused the middle class on, I'm going to be greedy, I'm going to make what I can. And that's a legacy that I don't praise in Ronald Reagan, and I certainly don't praise in George W. Bush.
I completely disagree with that mischaracterization, because here you have a situation in America under Clinton's administration where basically if you're a church where you can effectively help someone, or you're running a soup kitchen and you're looking for some federal dollars or some aid or some help or assistance to be able to get those so-called homeless people that all of a sudden showed up on the streets everywhere, because there was no homeless people before Reagan, according to you, that if they try to get some help, that they're told to go away, to butt out, to get lost. George W.
Bush's
initiatives has opened up the arms of compassion to be able to allow people who can serve the American hungry and the American homeless the best to be able to give them the tools and resources to succeed. Liberals call foul, and they said, nope, we don't want you to be helping out. We want the poor to suffer some more.
Let me talk about the faith-based initiative, because that's a great soundbite you just gave. I've heard it many times. It happens to be dead wrong, and I know that because I worked on the faith-based initiative when I worked in Congress. People misunderstand what it's all about, and this gives me a great opportunity to explain it. By the way, I did a show on it about a year ago. Maybe it's time that I do one again. And I call her. I know you're on the line. I'm going to get to you in just a second before we hang up. But let's talk about the faith-based initiative. For decades, at least since the 1960s, the United States government has given billions of dollars to religious organizations like Catholic Charities, like Jewish Federation, like the Joint Baptist Committee, lots of religious organizations, as long as they help people without regard to their religion. And it's worked for decades. Catholic Charities still gets hundreds of millions of dollars, and I support that. They do a lot of good. They did a lot of good in my former boss's district, frankly, and helping the poor. I support that. No Democrat that I know of opposes giving aid to religious organizations as long as they treat everyone fairly. What George Bush's faith-based initiative does, it does one thing and one thing only. It allows religious organizations to discriminate on the basis of religion with government money. And the Democrats say that is wrong. My tax dollars shouldn't go to something that only aids Baptists, or only aids Jews, or only aids Muslims, or only aids the Nation of Islam. We are a country, our tax money should go to serving everyone. And the Democrats believe it can go to religious organizations as long as it serves everyone, as long as it hires everyone. That's the basic difference, and that's very, very not well known, and that's why I'm really glad to get that out. Let me go to my caller who's been hanging on patiently. You got a few minutes left. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and John Robbins.
Yeah, this is Igor from Michigan.
Hi, Igor. How are you?
All righty. I think Bush has unwittingly made his greatest mistake by alienating Russia and Putin. And also with the possibility of creating a power vacuum in Iraq, also setting the stage for a possible Russian-Iranian alliance, which could set the stage for nuclear war. I wish my Republican pal could negate that.
Yeah, Igor, I think you make a good point here. Ronald Reagan was very much trying to stop the threat from Russia. And now it looks like Putin is actually citing the 2000 election as reason why he doesn't have to comply with democratic procedures there in Russia. Isn't Bush ignoring the threat that Russia could go back to being a dictatorship?
No, I think that, you know, Bush has established a good relationship with Putin, and I think that he's continued the lines of communication. And the only reason why those communication lines even exist, that a Republican had the audacity at the time to call communism what it was.
But shouldn't he condemn Putin's attempt to basically give up democracy in Russia? I mean, he's cracking down hard. There was a guy recently...
Bush broken the rules?
That's a separate question, too, which I can ask, too. Let me ask the first question first. Putin is already taking people who are speaking out against his government and jailing them. Shouldn't we be condemning and fighting Putin for that?
I know that Secretary Powell has made statements. He made it very clear that he hopes that relaxes, and he's trying to open up lines of communication, and he's working very hard with the Department of State to be able to...
Why isn't the president condemning Putin nationally?
What?
Why isn't the president giving us a speech and condemning Putin's actions nationally to try to stop the ongoing rush away from democracy in Russia?
I don't think it's good diplomacy that every little thing that happens is to go on and rant and rave like Howard Dean on television or Al Gore and blow up.
Even when you steal
like
an election.
Like a three-year-old tyrannical child.
Even when you steal an election, even when you don't let the opposition have any role in the election, that's not a big enough deal, huh? Well, I guess it wasn't. This brings us to Igor's second question. I guess it wasn't a big enough deal for George Bush in the election. Igor, ask your question, your second question.
Well, Bush has basically broken international rules. He's created his own doctrine, and doesn't that set the stage for Russia to say, hey, we'll make our own rules, we'll go back to the pre-Khrushchev days, and we'll tell you what's going on, and we will make an alliance with Iran, and we'll throw a few nukes their way, and we'll have a little real standoff.
If we break international law, doesn't that encourage other countries to do the same?
No, I think George W. Bush has been a leader in the international coalition. In fact, today it is reported that the UN is to back the Iraq resolution and that the United Nations Security Council will most likely vote 15-0 today on a resolution restoring Iraq's sovereignty, endorsing the plan which has been brought forward.
Yeah, but you're not answering the question. We only got a couple minutes left, so I don't want you to filibuster. Let me just try one last time. Doesn't the fact that George Bush flaunts international law, says I don't have to obey the Geneva Convention, breaks all the rules, doesn't that encourage other countries to do the exact same thing?
No, I don't think it does.
All right. Thanks for your call, Igor. I appreciate that. I got one more. Okay, I got one more email that I want to read, and then my guest is he's put up with a lot from us, not undeservedly so. But this is from Marcus. Marcus writes, "Hi, Mark." And here it comes, Tom. You ready? Here's what this email says. Hi, Mark. Are you sure this guest is representing the college Republicans and not the preschool ones? I've heard more issues skirting from this guy than any guest you've ever had on before. Until he answers a single question, I don't think he should be allowed to question you on Clinton. Tell him repeating phrases like Republican stuff and 2020 hindsight isn't helping his case. Hope you have a real guest on tomorrow. Regards." Well, that was pretty harsh. You got 1 minute left, Tom.
Well, I'll tell you this. In 1984, like we discussed, Reagan had a huge, overwhelming victory where Walter Mondale was only able to get the state of Minnesota. In a fury and a fit to go against George W. Bush, because the only thing the Democrats can unite behind is the fact that they hate him, they almost nominated Howard Dean, which I would have loved. I think that would have just been entertaining. I think he would have imploded on TV over and over again, and you know, would have had great material for Jay Leno and Dave Letterman for months to come.
Tom, I got to tell you, your time is up. I appreciate your coming on the air. I appreciate your enduring my questions and those of my callers. I have to agree. I do appreciate your taking us on. I have to say I agree with my emailer. I don't think he answered many of them, but I hope you come back another time and maybe answer more questions then.
Well, I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on the Inside Scoop. Well, you know, I think Mark has got the emailer right. You know, when he gets trapped, he keeps going on and on about, well, 2020 hindsight and so forth. Look, yes, Ronald Reagan did beat Walter Mondale in 1984. That's true. It's also 20 years later. And I don't think we're in for the same repetition at all. I think people are starting to understand that it runs a little thin. Frankly, first of all, I don't think George W. Bush is the kind of communicator that Ronald Reagan was. So he can't hide his distrust of ordinary Americans the way Ronald Reagan could. I mean, Ronald Reagan with a smile and a glance, and maybe it's because he grew up in the Depression, and he could understand, even though he was horrible to poor people and horrible to black people, at least Ronald Reagan could put a smile on it, and he seemed like a genial kind of guy. George Bush tries to do it. He claims he's compassionate conservative. It just doesn't succeed. I think people see that this is a guy who's gotten everything he ever wanted. Every time he failed in business, someone was there to bail out Georgie Bush. It was either his daddy's friends or Saudi Arabia. This is a guy who wouldn't even, not only didn't go to Vietnam, even though he supported the war, but he wouldn't even show up for the National Guard. This is a guy who really doesn't like to play by the rules. He's beyond the rules. He's above the rules. He's Prince George. I think Americans see that. And I don't think the election of 2004 will go in any way like the election of 1984. But that's it for Election Tuesday. I hope you enjoyed the show. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about one of my heroes, Bill Clinton. If Ronald Reagan was left office with the second highest approval rating since World War II, the highest was actually by Bill Clinton. Did you know that? We're going to play a speech by Bill Clinton tomorrow and talk about his vision for America. A vision much more inclusive, a vision of America where everyone helps everyone out, where America sticks together, the kind of America we could have again if we do as the song says and kick out the Republicans. This is Mark Levine signing off.
It's time to make the Republicans quit. The GOP stole the